Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio number 494. Oh, boy, Chris, we are getting awfully close to 500 here.
Wow, this is going to be a big epic moment.
Yeah, we might have to have multiple persons on for 500. Yeah. Actually, I might need to talk Eric into coming on for the first time, and Lord only knows how long. Since 400. If I warn him about now for 6 weeks from now, and give him an exact date, I might be able to get him to carve out the whopping 1 hour plus that it takes to record this wrestling podcast. enough about Eric, I suppose. How are you doing tonight, Chris?
I'm doing good, Kevin. How about yourself there?
I cannot argue. You can really watch a lot of professional wrestling these days. Just throwing that out there. I have hunkered down, and I started taping. I realized I have access, so I can tape New Japan now, the weekly show, although they were still doing New Year's Dash, so whatever, I already watched that. there's that, there's the Women of Wrestling, for Lord only knows why, DirecTV carries the Pursuit Station, so I can watch Impact Wrestling still, and I've been making more of a concerted effort to indeed watch said program. There's a lot of wrestling on TV, but I'm going to say that Becky Lynch still winning at wrestling.
Yes, she is. Becky Lynch is certainly the most... interesting character, the most over character in all of wrestling right now. These shows are very much built around her, while she's quote unquote suspended. Yeah, I mean we're obviously, it's interesting because they're obviously in the Becky Lynch business, but they're pretending like they're not. And I think some people are actually being fooled by it.
It's kind of funny that it's basically on the WWE, really, just because they have been not faithful to the audience's wishes so many times. As much as they say they may listen to them all the time, there are a lot of times where I'm just gonna throw it out there, they don't necessarily listen to them. So there is definitely enough built-in distrust there there's a reason that, I would definitely give a pass to people that think that she's going to get yanked. But, yeah, she has been getting entirely too much TV time to be thinking that she's out of the picture. When you have your segments with Stephanie McMahon and Triple H during the week, you're doing okay for yourself, if that's the situation. They're definitely, as you said, in the Becky Lynch business. If she does indeed have an injury, that's one thing for me. I'm like, there's no way that you're not having her looked at. the storyline, it is what it is, I suppose. But, she would legitimately not be on the roster if something like that was being refused. I would think that would cause quite a problem.
Yeah, it absolutely would. I believe everything I've seen, everything I've heard, read and heard, Becky's injury is not legitimate. She's, it's part of the storyline that's going to get them through this period into the, main WrestleMania buildup. It might also be the part of the excuse to get Charlotte into the match as we go along. Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, you know, again, also thinking, you know, she went through Stephanie, she went through, and she went through Triple H for a reason. She's going to have her big, maybe as early as this Monday night on Raw, she's going to have her big, or Tuesday on SmackDown, she's going to have her big segment with Vince McMahon. And she's going to knock him on his ass, too.
Yeah, I would expect that one to be just around the corner, and it'd be nice of Vince to show up on her home territory, because I am good. Like you said, they got to keep Becky and Ronda kind of away from each other anyway, so I don't really mind them being on separate shows during the week. They've had a couple of good confrontations the last few weeks. You can take a week off.
Yeah, you could probably take more than a week off for to keep them apart. In the meantime, obviously the Becky story with, you know, Charlotte will play out over time. Sure, it just looks like we'll probably get at least one more match, singles match between them. In the meantime, you know, we'll find out if it will be a triple threat match or not. You know, in the next, probably sometime in the next, you know, 4 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks. Yeah, no. But no, it's being done well. Once again, I mean, I think most people do have their preference for the singles match between Becky and Ronda.
Yeah, and I would think that the crowd kind of seems to agree with it, for the most part, that they kind of want it, because Charlotte's still getting a solid amount of boos, and she's definitely, laying into those boos, too, like, with the way she's talking.
She was definitely healing it up, big time tonight, more than she has in a while. She was excellent here. I mean, it's not a question of whether Charlotte deserves to be in the main event of WrestleMania. She has been at the top of her game for months now. But the question is which of the two options is the money dynamic? And I think most people do lay on the side of the Becky Ronda singles match. And then, you know, Charlotte getting Asuka, who, other than a video package, has been largely forgotten these last 2 weeks of television, SmackDown television.
Well, I was kind of wondering, I saw the video package this week, and I'm like, hold on, wasn't she actually on TV the other week? But I'm glad you just pointed out it's the last 2 weeks. Yeah, it's kind of funny that it's ending up like her first reign, where she does not end up on TV as frequently as other champions. I do think it was nice, at least, that, you know, they kind of crapped on the winning streak so much that they devalued it. And how much of a badass she still was.
Yeah.
You know, even she's after got, one got loss. A...
Yeah, she's got an incredible aura about her. You know, she has, you know, she, you know, I guess you say she worked her way back. She's, you know, featured fairly well for the last couple of months, but then the last couple of weeks, they've with the Women's Chamber, I mean, SmackDown's, you know, certainly had a rougher time than Raw filling up that chamber. You know, with the team of Naomi and Carmella, who have never teamed together before in that, before tonight, and in a match that they would go on to lose, and they're still in the chamber.
Yeah, well, I guess it's kind of funny. The SmackDown seems a little shorter on the women since all of the teams got declared for the chamber instead of having to win a match in.
Yeah, there's definitely a disproportionate number of women on Raw to SmackDown. That is one of those things that will have to be worked out in the international draft that will be taking place in Montreal after WrestleMania.
Yeah, because SmackDown doesn't need a lot of extra ladies, but they do at least need a couple extra to kind of help out there. And it's kind of funny too, because I was just and I know it's kind of off the ladies subject, and we can go back to it, but it's also a parallel thought. The glut of male tag teams on SmackDown is completely bonkers, especially if they decide to keep together Rusev and Nakamura for reasons that I can't completely figure out. But, you know, I guess we should go back to the ladies, though, before we get to that one. Yeah, because Asuka, Charlotte, Becky, I guess the other woman in the equation, there is Ronda Rousey. she seems destined for at least one cringe moment every week. And, yeah, it happened again this week, but in general, I still can't believe how good she is in the ring, and B, she is still good. Like, the backstage stuff with Becky was good.
Yeah, once again, angry Ronda is the best Ronda, because even when she gets flustered, you can still play along with the story they're telling. She can certainly tend to get a bit wordy in her responses, some kind of a Mad Lib game. what is she talking about now? Huh? What? something about skinning a rabbit? Huh?
Yeah. She can get a little lost sometimes. So I definitely think that. I would think it could be corrected, but maybe it's just never going to be, and it's just going to be a thing that, you know, holds her back at least a little bit. But, she's still really good. Like, everyone in this situation is, there's a reason why people are talking about it being the main event of WrestleMania, you know? All the people involved, like you said, Becky has been great, but Becky really did, Charlotte, she wasn't dead in the water because she was still being featured more, but she had been losing a little bit of steam, and Becky kind of helped her pick it up. You know, so I think that's one of those things that, I think that's the reason why I'm leaning towards Becky getting the singles match, too. And just because, and I mentioned it on Ye Olde Twitter there before hitting record here. If it isn't Charlotte and Asuka, there is a lot of building for whoever takes on Asuka on the SmackDown women's side. Because, like you said, Carmella and Naomi are a tag team now that her best, Naomi's old bestie, got bumped to champion. And, yeah, I guess they don't really need to stay together after this, but for some reason, I feel like it could be a good team. Kind of like Bayley and Sasha. They just need to work on the characters a little bit.
I liked how Naomi and Carmella fitted together this week. I thought, the Fabulous Glow is an obvious name. They're two. They both have a similar background, similar dance backgrounds. They have similar style. If they were just make a go of it in a tag team, pushed women's tag team division, I think they could do well together. Yeah, absolutely.
That would be that'd be pretty it'd be pretty interesting. I guess I'm assuming that, but honestly, one of those two would be the logical choices if Charlotte is in that triple threat.
Yeah, but it does also look like that they're pushing Mandy Rose pretty strongly as well. She's gotten out two pinfall wins over Naomi. They've got Corey Graves lusting over her for entire television shows. Yeah, no, I could see them trying with her, but once again, but as you said, it's just for WrestleMania. It does feel like Asuka needs a bigger opponent, and you know, leave Ronda and Becky alone, and let Charlotte and Asuka have their WrestleMania match. I think that seems like the best option. Hopefully they go in that direction. If that's not what they're thinking now, hopefully they can change their minds before they make make the final decision. Which I guess sometimes they change cards within like a week's notice. Sometimes if they really feel like things aren't going their way, but usually with WrestleMania they don't do that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like they haven't really overstated the chances that that Charlotte's going to be in the match. Like no, she's definitely
Charlotte has not. She did not last week demand that Becky's win be stricken from the record because she wasn't supposed to be in the match. She didn't whine or complain like that. She didn't stick a claim of the title match. Well, no, she did. Tonight she did. She pointed at the WrestleMania sign, and you know, she made it very clear that she wants that match.
Yeah.
But at some point, I do feel like that at some point, Asuka has to show up and say, "What about me, bitches?" You know.
Yeah, that would be a perfect time. Like you're kind of talking.
She should not be tolerating this.
Agreed. Yeah, that would really help out. Even if she doesn't, I guess, end up taking on Charlotte, it would seem that would be in her best interest to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right now she's an afterthought, and that's a damn shame. That should not be happening.
Well, and that's one of those. To me, one of those moments is just like, you know, someone suggested, like, that's the one thing that I always think to myself. It's just like, someone suggested this already, right? ? And that the powers that be thought to themselves, nah, we're not going to go that route. That's going to make Asuka look too good.
Something like that, because it's like, that it's not about who deserves what. It's not about earning it. It's not about who's technically the best or anything. There is a money dynamic with Ronda and Becky that should not be messed with. Only in the most unique of situations is a multiple person WrestleMania main event viable, in my opinion. Maybe arguably only twice in history wasn't really. The WrestleMania 20 triple threat, and then the WrestleMania 30 triple threat. Other than that, no multiple, every multiple person match that they've ever done, including when they turned WrestleMania 2000 into a four way with a McMahon in every corner, and that bloated mass is just like, no. As I said, it costs a very unique string of circumstances for a multiple person match to be justifiably a WrestleMania main event. This year we just don't have that. As much as I love Charlotte,
I think that to me they can work is a triple threat main event.
I mean the match could work as a quality match, but I just feel like they're gonna get a lot of attention because it's Rousey, because it's the first women's main event. You want it to be as simple as possible for the casual audience, for the mainstream audience. You don't want to have to explain what a triple threat match is, or explain how a champion can lose their title without even being pinned, because that's just stupid.
Hey, yeah, I got you. I hear you talking. I was just pushing for answers there. I think that was a good way to go. There are more reasons to go with the singles match than it. But I mean, I do think though that. With it's always just kind of funny the name recognition of Charlotte Flair, and I do believe she's one of the few people that they've decided can have two names. They've certainly played that up, and that's an easy part to play up in the media too, though. That would definitely be like on the opposite side of the fence from where you're coming from. I guess I don't think there's any need for it. Have it be a main event next year. Like, they're both good enough that it would not surprise me if they're good enough to be main eventing next year.
Right, no, not at all. No, it's just like, yeah, you can wait till next year. Granted, the last one said about what Ronda Rousey is going to do post WrestleMania, but I
Oh.
guess she has her and the company have not come to terms on what that is, what her schedule post WrestleMania is going to be. But still, at the same time, you know what? Yes, it was all, probably always going to be Rousey versus Charlotte until about November. But then once Becky got hot, you got to go with the hot hand.
And she's been hot for a long time at this point. Like you said, like it was November or something like that. Like this hasn't been something that's been a fluke. It's continued to roll on, whether they're on SmackDown or Raw.
I mean, this is akin to, maybe it's not as extreme, but well, I'm trying to think, because it's not like they're replacing Becky from the match, but it's like if the plan for WrestleMania 14 back in 1997 going to 1998 was Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels. And the rise of Stone Cold Steve Austin happened along the way. I think you would still not want to do, and Bret, and everything with Montreal didn't happen, and Bret stayed with the company through WrestleMania 14. I think you still wouldn't have gone with a triple threat. You would have picked one, had one of them go in as the defending champion to defend it and lose to Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I smell what you're cooking. I think you've made quite the persuasive case
Yes, I have. Thank you very much.
for why it should be a singles match. But yeah, who like I don't think the WWE's really played their hand. Like there's plenty of time for them to put Charlotte in there, but like you said, like she has a desire to do it, but they haven't really pushed the idea that it is gonna happen out there, really. So it'll be pretty interesting to see what ends up unfolding there with those ladies. So, I guess is there anything else? We always seem to be kicking off the show with the ladies these days. Is there much to talk about with the women's tag team Elimination Chamber field set?
Not a heck of a lot. I mean, the field is set. I would still say that Sasha and Bayley are the favorites, but they also might hold off them winning the belts until WrestleMania and let a heel team run with them. I mean, it looks like Ruby Riott is getting the women's championship match against Ronda Rousey at Elimination Chamber, so it's a chance for the Riott Squad to win it all.
Oh,
And
yeah.
they can't win it all if they don't win the first one. If say the Elimination Chamber match, kicks off the show like Women's Elimination Chamber match did last year.
Oh, right.
So, I mean, you want maybe have the Riot Squad have some momentum going into Ruby Riot's match with Ronda Rousey, because otherwise it's just a complete it's a glorified squash.
Yeah, and you're not gonna have Rousey start the show off.
I guess they could. Because the opening match isn't what it used to be. They opened with some big matches, but no, I don't think.
Yeah, I know that they've started off with some bangers, and like you said, like it's we're far beyond the days of it being somewhat disappointing to be a curtain jerker. Like you said, there are a lot of great matches that end up having gone on first on a show these days.
Right. The idea that people haven't found their seats yet before the first match, it has gone passé. Plus, there's an hour of pre-show stuff, and they open the doors pretty early, so...
Yeah, that's a hard one to sell these days. I guess I would not be surprised if the Riot Squad ends up winning the women's tag team titles, just because, like you said, they've been put in a pretty strong position. They've been put in a strong position on Raw. You know, it's they've been featured on TV a lot. You know, both Ruby Riott and Sarah Logan and Liv Morgan, you know, they've had backstage segments the whole time that they've been up. As much as I made fun of them, it's better to be on TV than not to be on TV. And they've been on TV more times than not.
No. They've had consistent TV times since they've come onto Raw. You know, they've had their ups and downs. They've taken their wins and losses. But no, they've an effective act. We used to make fun of them for how they look like three people who would never hang out in real life. They've done a lot to fix that. They really have worked on their look, their mannerisms, how they walk to the ring together. You know, they're always, you follow any of them on social media, they're always together in real life. You know,
well, and I think and that
Liv stood up at Sarah's wedding. I mean, so I guess they are really, you know, close like that, but you know, it didn't, at first, it wasn't coming through on TV.
I think that's the biggest thing, that in some ways, just the longevity of the act has helped solidify that they're friends. Like, there's no way that they keep that group together if there isn't some type of bond there, you know? I would have thought that if they fail at this gimmick, that they'd be, you know, separated in some way or another. Whether it's Ruby Riott going out on her own and being a singles, and Sarah Logan and Liv Morgan staying as a tag team, you know, is something that is, you know, in another alternate universe happening. But in this one, it's a three-woman squad. And yeah, I think because they haven't done that much on TV to kind of to sell them as being friends, other than just them still being together. Like you said, because they still have, I guess it's an interesting point that you bring up, is that they've, even though they still look separate, they look more unified with the way that they're presenting themselves.
Right, yeah. I mean, they all have their signature look. I mean, Liv Morgan, I think, has probably improved the most. I feel like she's gotten herself really into her, whatever they call it, the brat character. I've become a pretty big fan of hers. Sarah Logan is solid, and Ruby is effective as the leader.
Yeah. And, well, and they've given her longer matches than the other two, but the other two really have done a lot to to me improve in the ring too, in their time on Raw. They're certainly trusted with more ring time than a lot of the ladies still, even at this point. So good on them. You know, they've you can really tell that their work is paid off. You know, for as much as we do bag on the WWE for not rewarding the people who are working hard, you know, some hardworking people do get rewarded in this system.
Right, yeah.
So I guess now that we've talked a lot about the Riot Squad, that seemed to be our very well, I shouldn't even say very early pick because Elimination Chamber is next week. You know, maybe our early pick to keep Sasha and Bayley from the belts. And set up, like you said, a WrestleMania match. Yeah, I think we can move on to the men then. And I'll tell you what, the men of SmackDown tonight, to me, killed it. All of the men who are in the Elimination Chamber on that brand.
Yeah, they absolutely did quite a bit to caught increased interest in the match itself, in the Elimination Chamber match. Everyone, you know, in particular Daniel Bryan and Samoa Joe, cut really, really good promos. They even, you know, put some heat between the two baby faces with AJ Styles and Jeff Hardy. Mustafa Ali handled himself very well in a match against Randy Orton, whether he, you know, won or not.
Yeah,
Jeff Hart.
he keeps on being put into big matches, and that's another one that, you know, you just gotta kind of, it's kind of like Andrade, you know, when they're putting you in there with those kind of names, even if the push, even if you're taking L's, it's worth it.
But did you see the injury to Mustafa Ali's eye?
You know what? I must have missed that in the viewing, and I'm not sure that I erased that yet, to be honest with you. So I probably could go take a look at it here real quick.
Well, there's photos up all over the Twitter.
Oh, okay. Well, I have not seen that.
It must have been something, you know, somewhat innocuous. They called it. They caused it.
Oh, okay. Well, I would hope that a black eye or something of the sort would not keep him from doing too much. Broken orbital socket is a whole different ball game. What were you gonna say?
No, that is definitely a different ball game, but as long as it's just a black eye, I assume everything will be a go for him at Elimination Chamber. But everyone got some, all six men in the Elimination Chamber got some shine on them. They all got an opportunity to look pretty good. I thought Jeff Hardy's match with Daniel Bryan was his best match, singles match in WWE in a while. He definitely in that match looks something akin to the Jeff Hardy of old. I feel like he's had some rough runs of late, but that he looked good there.
Well, and I think that they're starting to finally use him a little bit more like I kind of expected them to, and not giving him so many matches. You know, I still feel like he's wrestling often enough, but you know, they're not trotting him out there every week. Like, I never expected Jeff Hardy and his brother Matt Hardy to be out there on a weekly basis ever when they came back.
Yeah, no. It definitely took a lot out of them. Certainly took a lot out of Matt, who may or may not be returning anytime soon. And Jeff, Jeff, you know, Jeff has has such a special quality about him that, you know, he can always seem to be pushed to a main event level when they need him. But they need to be careful with him, both in terms of his health and in terms of, you know, letting people see Jeff Hardy age before their eyes.
Oh, right. Yeah, I mean, he's done a good job of kind of changing up his offense enough that it's not quite as noticeable. Although it kills me when he does the twist of fate, since it always looks like a stunner to me.
Oh yeah. Oh, I was actually just thinking that. Yes, his twist of fate does look absolutely awful. Yeah, I'm not a fan of him taking that move on in his singles career, and I never have. And I don't think his version has ever looked good.
Oh yeah. So, I guess I thought it was okay before. Maybe I'd have to go back and look. But, yeah, it definitely doesn't look good now. But yeah, I mean, I think that he did have a really good match with Brian, who's, you know, also had to do his fair share of, toning down his style. Or really maybe just exhibiting more of the Matt style that everyone, liked him for previously. So, yeah. And yeah, Daniel Bryan is definitely a guy that, he's found another great character. I don't know how it's great that they've let him go heel, and because he's another person that's really he's on a real roll.
Yeah, I mean, what more can be said about what Daniel Bryan has been doing? You know, once again, another great performance from him tonight, because I think after the melee, after his match with Jeff Hardy was done and over with, they had an inordinate amount of time left. And I'm not sure if that interview with backstage was planned. He seemed legitimately shocked to see Caleb Braxton standing there with a microphone. So I don't know if he just jumped right into character right at that moment, because that's just how dialed in he is. You know, that he can just, you know, completely, you know, into this character, that he can just jump into it anytime, anywhere. He seems like he's trying to you know, to be in character 24/7.
Oh,
which I, you know what, this day and age, I can absolutely appreciate
that. yeah, I mean, it was kind of weird that they cut to that backstage segment. That is definitely not a thing that happens on a regular basis. So it was definitely a little weird to see that one. But, you know, I don't know. I would think that one was planned, though, just because it just doesn't happen that often, you know? Like, SmackDown is definitely where different things happen. I still don't understand why that is, but it does consistently make SmackDown better than Raw.
Yeah, no. It is different. It's laid out very differently. It's not as, it doesn't feel as, you know, typical episode of SmackDown does not feel as tightly scripted as an episode of Raw does, and that can help. It was definitely weird that, you know, by the time AJ Styles cleared the ring, there was still 4 minutes of television left. But I guess if this was real, know, everything wouldn't wrap up right at the top of the hour every single week.
Oh. yeah. Every now and again, they add some element of realism. And that's definitely one of them. And it's not something that I would automatically think of offhand. But it is definitely a good way, again, just to change things up a little bit. Like, it's really kind of funny how little the format of Raw has changed since they said things are going to change. But SmackDown continues to be that change, and I don't understand why both shows. it'll be a great mystery to me for many years, Chris, as to how two different brands can be on two different levels.
I don't get it either. I mean, the obvious difference is one is 2 hours and the other is 3 hours.
Yeah, there's definitely more to plan for, but again, they even going back to the women, like, you know, they've always kept more people on Raw. Well, and I'm trying to think, did the first split happen before they went to 3 hours?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it was the first split was a long time ago.
Okay. Well, I guess I was going to say that I even felt like the first go-round, because I guess I didn't want to assume that that Raw was always 3 hours. It just feels like it's been that way forever. that Raw kept more people even in that time frame than... even now, which is, again, there's good reason. When you have an extra hour of TV, you should get more people on your roster.
Yeah. Now, yeah, it makes sense. I don't remember back then if it really felt like Raw had more people. It is pretty much for the longest time, even during the original brand split, did absolutely feel that, you know, SmackDown would get the shorter end of the stick as things would go on.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how, SmackDown's turned the shorter end of the stick into the bit better end of the stick more times than I care to count over the years, and it's still, again, it's kind of a great mystery that it can run better than Raw so frequently. Because this Raw, like, it really wasn't the worst Raw, but it really wasn't that great either.
No, Raw certainly has had some rough points. That finish to that main event was one of the most nonsensical finishes I've seen in a long time. I have no idea how that is possibly a disqualification. I don't get it. I guess I get that they want to do a rematch with no disqualifications at the pay-per-view, but then why not just have the heels do heel stuff to cause the disqualification? Why go this you know, just completely asinine finish where Braun hits the illegal man in the match and it's called a disqualification? It made absolutely no sense to me, and it was really stupid.
Yeah. Like you said, they've handled this situation before. I don't understand why it came as some surprise, or, like, that was their out-of-the-box thinking on Raw. Come up with some weird arcane rule that is completely awful and enforce it in the main event.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if I remember a while back, they tried to start enforcing a three saves rule in tag team matches, but that went by the wayside pretty quickly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they tried to do that like some point in like maybe the mid 2000s. Yeah, on a blank exactly as to when. It feels like something they try to do.
Uh-huh.
It was along with an edict from Vince McMahon that said he was really getting on. There was a time when Vince was really getting on the officiating.
Oh.
Wanted the referees to take more charge, and if someone forgets to break on five while they say they're choking their opponent, just call the disqualification. If someone forgets to count it or kick out it before three, just count the pin anyway. Doesn't matter if it's a title line or anything. We'll deal with that later. But this felt like something that this just felt like a poor excuse to get out of doing a finish in more egregious way than usual.
Yeah, I agree. There are definitely ways to get a DQ, even out of Braun Strowman. Have him use his set of stairs or something like that. Have him just generally freaking out. Some type of feat of strength kind of situation would have been just peachy. But no, they went with some weird DQ. So, yeah, that was a really trash ass finish. And maybe I was too tired at that point to even be outraged by how terrible that finish was.
Yeah, it wasn't a great. It wasn't a bad. It wasn't a really really bad episode of Raw. Like we were having to close 2018, but it was probably the worst Raw in a while. Raw's been fairly good recently, but yeah, this show just didn't not a lot of meat on the bone this week.
Yeah. I was fully amused that Corey Graves. I do remember that Ethan Carter III, who is now just much shorter EC3 full time. That his gimmick when I saw him in Pro Wrestling Ohio, Pro Wrestling Ohio, that he was the deviant Michael Hutter, and I quite got a kick out of Corey Graves referencing that in his description of EC3 on The Moment of Bliss. But that did start the 2-month tour of Dean Ambrose doing jobs for everyone under the sun.
Oh yeah, you know what? EC3 did not come off well at all. I mean Dean Ambrose buried him on the mic. Then they had a pedestrian match that EC3 won on a roll of. I have no idea why. Since last summer in NXT, they've insisted on promoting EC3 as a babyface. He's not a babyface. The character is not the character of the 1%. Trust fund baby is not a babyface character. There's nothing really likable about him. He doesn't. This is just from his NXT and on Raw, he's been given zero character development. He wasn't even allowed to talk on Raw, and Dean Ambrose just absolutely buried it. I mean, because what is EC3? if you don't have the backstory of Dixie Carter, what the fuck is an EC3?
Yeah, it was hilarious to see her acknowledge him being on TV on ye olde Twitter. I don't even think that they did that great of a job describing that part of EC3 on NXT. They certainly made it clear that he was rich and part of the 1%.
Yeah.
But they really kind of stayed away from why he's EC3 exactly.
If we're gonna do, if we're gonna go through with this, he's gonna be this character. Number one, he needs to be a heel, and number two, they do need to introduce Dixie Carter. She doesn't have to be on TV every week. She doesn't have to be in his corner. Just some kind of a video, something explaining his wealth, where he gets his wealth, that you know where he gets his name. Once again, I made this point on Twitter, and it's really sticks out to me like a sore thumb as I when watching some of the old WWE Superstars episodes from 1992 on the WWE Network. The lack of introductory of effective, well produced introductory vignettes is really hurting these characters as they're coming up from NXT.
Well, and when they do have them, they repeat them.
Oh yeah, they did the same one with the close up of his ass. For like 5-6 weeks. That helped a lot.
Yeah, and then they choose. Well, they just choose the wrong one. It's just like, why did you choose this one? Like, I know that they couldn't use the confrontation with the Velveteen Dream at the pool, but I mean, even that kind of a situation was more advantageous for his character than the vignette they came up with. And plus, yeah. He is really being painted as a dumb dumb.
Yeah, he's being painted as a dumb dumb, a mute. I don't understand what they're doing with him at all, or if this is what they had, then why is he even on the main roster? He should have been as a heel. He should have been kind of a slam dunk, but insisting on promoting him as some kind of a babyface. You know, he didn't look good in the ring against Ambrose. You know, he won on a fluke schoolboy. I'll say it like this. He won a worked wrestling match after Dean Ambrose just embarrassed him for real on the microphone. That doesn't work. It doesn't work that way. You don't. And so much of the, unfortunately, so much of the audience knows that Dean Ambrose is leaving, that at this point that maybe beating him isn't going to be all that effective at getting new talent over.
Well, yeah, that is part of the problem with the Dean Ambrose job tour, is that they did, the WWE publicly acknowledged him leaving, like, do all fans know? I'm sure they, not all fans know. But like you said, there are enough people in the know that if anything, the effectiveness is definitely weakened because of the people that do know the situation.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
So, yeah, I you can have him job all you want, but yeah, you needed EC3 to go over stronger if he was going to get belittled that much. Even though he won in somewhat short order, it was not in any way a resounding victory. Which is, you know, Dean Ambrose is getting paid to do what you tell him to do, and he probably knows that since he's leaving the territory, he has taken a lot of L's in the meantime. So I would imagine if you're going to keep him on TV, he knows what's coming. So, and he seems like he's going to do the professional thing. And that was kind of the other funny thing about it, is that it might have been, well, actually, Dean Ambrose had good segments when he was going against Seth Rollins. I can't even say that. I think Ambrose has been doing well. Oh, you know what? This is a point that I meant to mention even last week. It's really crazy to me now. I kind of thought about this after we recorded last week. Is that I wonder if the WWE turning Dean heel and then questioning Renee about Dean's mindset had anything to do with his contract situation, because if that was the case, that's kind of fucked up, but also not something that would surprise me out of the WWE.
Yeah, that whole timeline is confusing, because I don't think they would have put the Intercontinental title on him if they knew at first, if they knew he'd already, turned down their final offer. Maybe if they were in the middle of the process, if they think that was going to get him to as a dangling carrot for him to stay. But yeah, no, it's possible that they were needling Renee because they were already having issues with Ambrose. But I guess there's no way to know for sure.
you do not make as a compelling point as you did earlier, but there is a. There is some logic in there about him getting the ice. And even a win over Seth Rollins is nothing to sneeze at in the WWE these days. And really, for the last, 4 or 5 years, it's probably nothing to sneeze at. I would think that they didn't really... have that in mind when they were doing that. But it was something that had crossed my mind. What else? I guess we've got to talk about the carniest carny of carnies. I am honestly I hate Jeff Jarrett by a wide margin, but somehow this motherfucker keeps on popping up on TV, and what I assumed was a one-off at the Royal Rumble is at least turned into, let's say, a pre-show match at the Elimination Chamber with himself and Elias.
It's possible, but it also felt like Elias won the match, but Jarrett and Road Dogg got their feet back, afterward, and maybe this will be over for now. But they said that Jarrett had signed a contract that was going to put him on, make him a TV character. So this is going to continue. It is absolutely. Saying that this is happening in 2019, nearly 20 years after Jarrett's last match on Raw, he's in a match on Raw after all the bad history, after holding Vince up for more money, after trying to run competition for seemingly 15, for about 15 years, after everything, Jeff Jarrett was not only given, but the WWE rehab, which is a nice thing for WWE to do, putting him in the Hall of Fame was a nice thing to do and a nice little moment for him. But a full fledged comeback in 2019 is not something I expected. Maybe it's over from here, but who knows? It's Jeff Jarrett. The man apparently can talk himself into anything.
Yeah, God bless him. Like I said, not a fan, but, like you said, everything you list there, the guy, he's getting paid for all this, and, I may be in shock and awe about the whole thing, but he's doing something right. So, God bless Jeff Jarrett. God bless. And what other, happenings of note are, I think we're about done with Raw. Is there anything outside of the WWE that's worth talking about?
Well, I guess as of Thursday, we will have an announcement of when All Elite Wrestling Double or Nothing tickets will be on sale, so that they'll be having a big press event at the MGM Grand on Thursday night. heavy speculation and rumor that Kenny Omega will appear at that event to officially announce that he will be a part of All Elite Wrestling. So I think that's a that could be a pretty big deal.
Okie dokie. Well, I will say that the beer of the week again is Stunt Granny Brewing's yet unnamed eggnog milk stout. Still have not thought about even thinking about naming that one a wrestling term. So I'll have to figure that out. It might have to involve Mick Foley since he thinks he's Santa Claus. And that's when milk stout, when a eggnog should be served. At DeFrango 11, at Chris Calamita, the brand's at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to us. And have a good night.
Night. Later.